Man, I missed that beat. Isn't that killer? Just missed it. I missed being here with you. Oh, we're back. Welcome to the show. So excited to be back. I took a month off. Turns out they shut the whole world down. And when they did that, yes, a podcast does maintain social distancing as I'm interviewing the Navards who are in England. We didn't do that sitting in the same room, which might surprise you. But nonetheless, I felt it was only fair to give the Navards the proper credit they're due. And so hopefully we get to start meeting together as a church this month. And I'm really excited about that. They'll be presented at the coffee table like we've done in the past few missionaries. I want to make sure they were fully invested in what we were doing as a church. They're our partners, after all. We get to interview Dave this month. Nicole, unfortunately, couldn't be a part of the interview. They have two little kids, and she was taking care of the kids. But I did get to interview Dave, which is really cool because I grew up with Nicole. Don't know that I've ever met Dave. They're living over in York, and that's not New York, but the old York, and doing a lot of wonderful things with YWAM. Their heart is just in a really incredible place. They've got some unbelievable work that they do. And I think you're going to find it really interesting. In a lot of ways, they mirror what we saw last month with the younger Ernsts. But at the same time, they have a lot of differences as well in the way that they operate. So I think you're going to really like the show. If nothing else, you get to listen to an hour and a half of somebody talk at you in a British accent. I mean, that alone sells the pod. Saddle up. Enjoy the show. We're back. All right, episode 7. Today we're talking to Dave Navard. Dave and Nicole are serving over in the UK. So pretty excited to have them on. I grew up with Nicole, but me and Dave were just talking, and I don't know that we've ever actually met, or if we have, it was very briefly. So this is going to be a really fun conversation. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good. Yeah, thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. This is a ton of fun. It's going to be a fun show because we get to just kind of talk back and forth, and like I said, I'm going to be learning along with everybody else, so this is going to be a good time. Nicole actually went to our church. We grew up together for many years, and then you two met, but obviously from your accent, you're from the UK, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so me and Nicole met in 2008. She was over in England. She was originally visiting her sister Steph, who I'm sure a number of people at church might remember from years ago. And Stephanie and her husband and their kids were living in York, and Nicole came over and did an internship with YWAM. And I was on that same internship in 2008, and that's where we met. So I'm originally from near London. So yeah, married into an American family, which is great.
That's awesome, man. Well, welcome. Although I got to tell you that I was so excited for this podcast because there's something about British accents that just drives Americans crazy. So I think that like people are going to listen to your podcast like 50 times.
Well, yeah, you never know. I hope it doesn't distract people too much. I'll try and talk as clearly as I can.
No, you sound great, man. It's perfect. So tell me about, I know you're with YWAM, and you guys were an internship together. How did that grow into, because now you're basically full-time near York, correct? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we both, when you work with, so Youth with a Mission, I'm not sure how familiar everyone is with Youth with a Mission or YWAM as a missions agency, but essentially they've got teams all around the world, and they've got close to, I think, 20,000 full-time staff serving in different parts of the world. And in England, we've got maybe about 20 different teams over here. And there's a team up in the north of England. That's where we're based, and that's in a city called York. It's probably, if you were to drive, maybe about 3.5 hours from London. You can do it quicker on a train in a couple of hours. But yeah, we're based up in York, which is a city of about 200,000 people, and it's a beautiful, beautiful city. It's very popular with tourists. It's got ancient Roman walls that go all the way around the city, and it's got a huge cathedral in the heart of the city, and it's just so much history to see.
That's awesome. That's that's one of the places that's actually been kind of on my bucket list. In general, the UK has some unbelievable places, but yeah, those types of places where you've got a bunch of history is really, really unique and fun. So that must be a fun little spot to live. Are you surrounded by, like, are you in the kind of hill country as well? Or what's the geography like? Like, can you paint that picture for me?
Yeah, we live kind of close to the center of the city. So we're in kind of very kind of densely kind of urban area. But in the surrounding region, it's in a county of North Yorkshire, which is part of a wider county or area of England called Yorkshire, which is a very distinctly culturally proud part of England. And it's got a number of national parks that are really beautiful to go and visit. They've got lots of kind of relatively, it's, I guess, we're, you know, in the context of Colorado, it is tiny little hills, but it's still kind of more land, I guess, and quite a lot of rivers running through them, areas of fairly kind of beautiful areas that you can go out and explore and hike, and dotted around it, and they've got a few kind of ruined castles that you can go and visit, and people make the most of going to see them.
That's awesome. That's got to be something that works out really well too with YWAM a little bit, right? Because let's start with this actually. What are you guys currently doing with YWAM?
So we're surfing in York, and we're kind of at the moment, it's a bit of a funny season for us. We're in a bit of a time of transition. I guess I could kind of set the context for that really, which would probably be helpful. We've been doing what's called a DTS, which is a discipleship training school, or a kind of, it's essentially a 6-month training program for people who are exploring whether they would like to go into missions, discovering more of how their giftings and their they might find a way for their giftings to connect with missions. And so we've been running ones with a particularly creative focus over the last few years, and we've run photography focused ones and a visual arts focused DTS, and we were running them when we moved back to York in 2015. We'd spent some time over in another city nearby York, a city called Leeds, and we were there for about 5-6 years. And when we came back to York, we were essentially taking on a new rhythm of running these schools. And we're a relatively small team here in York, and we were kind of facilitating these schools, which was taking a big chunk of our time and energy. And we were able to invest in a number of different young people. We'd have people coming from, a lot of people from the States, a lot of people from Canada and other parts of Europe, and they would come and live with us. We would put them up in housing. They'd be with us in York, serving in local ministries, serving the local church, but also receiving training and doing local ministries. And we would kind of have them doing a phase of discipleship training locally in York for about 3 months, and then we would send them out overseas to explore how some of the things that they've been learning in the classroom could be outworked in a context that was a little bit more unfamiliar for them. And we would often lead those phases of outreach, or we would be pastorally kind of facilitating them with some of our other leaders here in York. We were finding that in the rhythm of running them, that they were taking a fair amount of our time. As we were kind of running them through the year, they would, as a small team, be a huge commitment for us. And we were just kind of beginning to explore whether that was something that we would like to continue forward, or whether it'd be worth pressing pause on running those schools and have a bit of a reevaluation as to whether they would be the best thing to continue running going forward. So we basically last year put a pause on running those schools in York, and myself and our other leader here in York, who's called Douglas Howland, we did a course that was based around spiritual formation. And we did that for a year. It's a part-time course with YWAM. It's absolutely phenomenal. We learned so much through doing it. And in the context of that, we were invited to ask a number of different questions relating to calling. And we found that our leaders here in York, Doug and Beth Howland, have felt led to move back to the States. So they're dear, dear friends of ours. And we've been working closely with them for probably about 11 years. And it was actually Doug who first explained to me about YWAM and was my one-on-one, my disciple when I came into YWAM. So they're in the process of preparing to move back to the States, to Baltimore. And we're now in the position of exploring what it looks like for us to continue here in York and potentially having another team come and join us. It's all kind of, I guess, at the moment being processed on a more internal level before anything can be kind of publicly kind of put out there. But we're just in a process of transition, I should say.
Gotcha. So, but it sounds like you're planning on staying kind of in that area if that's kind of your goal at this point, would you say?
I think we feel led to stay in York. Yeah. Yeah, we do.
That's awesome. Yeah, we have. So the DTS and in general YWAM, this is a good piggyback because we just interviewed the Ernsts last month and they do YWAM and they run DTS down in Mexico. It's a neat program because it does allow a lot of, like you said, a lot of youth to come from different countries and kind of explore what does their faith actually mean to them and how do they, you know, what could mission life look like. So we've also had a number of kids from the church go through YWAM. So a lot of people, it's good to get these more clear, like what are they actually doing? What are we sending our kids to do? So, but it's
an amazing program. It really is. It's life-changing. It can give you the context to just jump into your faith in a really I guess kind of you're alongside others that are equally hungry and you're kind of in this context that's unfamiliar to you and you can really just see your faith come alive in a new way and it's just exciting to see that and be a part of that with some of the young people that have spent time with us. You can see over the course of the time they've spent with us how much they've grown and just in all sorts of ways in their lives. So, yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, it's the type of program, right, that kind of lends itself towards you have to kind of want to be there and be interested, right? So it seems like they're going to be engaged for the most part, all the people that you're working with.
Yeah, and we have a fairly in-depth application process where people kind of, are asked a lot of questions as to the reason for them wanting to come. And, you know, that process itself, I think, often causes people even more anticipation or hunger for being there. So often when you have people join you, they can be in a place of being really, really willing to receive. But equally, you know, it's a journey of discovery for a lot of people. And sometimes some of the things that people discover are a little uncomfortable, like all of us when we're growing in our relationship with God and we are understanding things about ourselves that we come to terms with, which we, you know, areas of brokenness or areas in our lives that we are finding difficult or challenging, and having to help people walk through some of those challenges in the context of community can present challenges sometimes,
right?
Make for some colorful discussions and but you know, it's the reality of life, isn't it? You know, sometimes when you gather people together that are all hungry to grow, that process of learning and growing, it means that it's not always an easy path, but it's a rich one and one that people often look back on at the end and see some of the things that they struggled through or challenges that they faced, and the sense of kind of walking with others alongside you doing that, I think, makes it a lot richer experience to kind of go through.
It's interesting too, because it's at kind of a pivotal time in most of these people's lives, right? It's not, I mean, they're growing and making these discoveries about themselves, but they're also going through a lot just in the fact that most of them are teenagers and, you know, freshly out of high school and things like that. So it tends to be a time of growth anyways, and a time of kind of confusing emotions. And so you add that into the learning your spiritual self, and that's difficult.
Yeah. And learning how to cook, living in community with a lot of people, you know, they've never left home and they're all in a house together. And, you know, we're in a sense helping people figure out life away from home in, you know, and you've got some people that are slightly older that have maybe been to university, and you've got lots of cultures all mixing together from different, you know, you might have a Swiss culture, a German culture, an Australian culture, American culture, all in one house. And, you know, all those different viewpoints on the world coming together in one space means that, you know, you can learn in a way that's quite unique in a way.
Oh man, in some ways I think about college and university in the United States now, and with the expense that it is, and I'm like, man, it feels like a lot of these kids need to be looking into YWAM programs because they're going to get a pretty serious education.
Yeah, it's really helpful actually, and we have had a lot of people come fresh out of high school, and quite a number, you know, a good majority actually of people that we have with us have ended up going into pursuing something at university that they feel a lot more confident about going into after having spent time with us, because a lot of what you're discovering on the DTS is centered around, you know, who your identity and who has God created you to be, and what are your passions, and what are the things that have been spoken over your life over the course of from childhood all the way through till, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, you know, and helping people discover some of what they're really passionate about and what they're what they might feel like they want to invest their lives in is a space where people can kind of really invest in that. And then as people kind of start in that, we can guide people in that journey. And that's a real privilege.
Oh, that's neat. Tell me a little bit about some of the local ministry too. You mentioned that while they're there, they're working with some local ministry. Is that something that you guys kind of set up as well through your church and through other programs like that, or is that something that they kind of just develop over the 6-month program?
It's something that we've been in York as a YWAM team for a good number of years. So we've developed a really strong relationship with the local church here, and York's fairly unique in the unity that exists between the different churches in the area. There's, for I think maybe about 20 years, the leaders of the churches in the city, a good majority of them meet every week for breakfast and to pray together and have fellowship every Wednesday morning. And that's something that YWAM has been involved in for a number of years. So we've kind of, through that, been able to really be in touch with what is going on in the city, where some of the needs are in terms of ministry. So often some of the ministries that we get our interns, our DTS students involved in, come out of needs that have been expressed by church leaders, some areas of ministry that they feel like they could do with, a helping hand. Like there's a student ministry that works with international students that our interns have worked with on the evenings, and they have like an informal cafe where people can come and learn English. But often people that come to that are from areas of the world where they've struggled to meet with like-minded people. And we've had a lot of people from China and other parts of Asia that have struggled to connect with people outside of their own culture. And they'll come along to this international cafe, and our students have been able to befriend them, connect with them. And that's often a part of the program, an opportunity to share testimonies or what God's been going on, you know, doing in their lives through the course of the DTS. There's also other ministries that are in the city that we've been involved in facilitating homeless ministries. Over the years, there's been a ministry that's set up that is a nightlife ministry that goes out in the early hours of the morning over the weekends. And there's a lot of people here that, you know, love to go out clubbing and go to the pubs, and they say in York, I think there's enough pubs for every day of the year. So it's a popular place for people to come and have a good night out. And often towards the earliest hours of the morning, you can imagine it gets pretty, you know, hairy, and there's a lot of people wandering around, getting lost, disconnected from their friends, just a bit drunk and not quite sure what to do, where to go. And there's a ministry that YWAM helped set up with a church here in York basically gives out water, goes and helps people that are needing to get into taxis, and essentially just tries to be Jesus to people that are in that place of feeling worse for wear. But like I say, over the years, there's been lots of different ministries that we've had our interns get involved in. And one thing that we've always had as part of the kind of the rhythm of what we do as a school, as these DTSs, is having a strong focus on the creative side. So we've often helped them find ways to connect creatively in the city as well with doing outreach through different creative ways.
Oh, neat. That's I love some of that ministry. There's a couple of points that stood out. That one, I don't know, I really enjoy that ministry where they actually go out and meet with people where they're at that time, at, you know, when they're out in the pubs and stuff. I feel like too often Christians are almost afraid of that. And so not that I'm advocating that, like, hey, we should all go out to pubs and, you know, be out at 3 a.m. But the fact that you're willing to meet people where they're at and just be loving and just be Jesus at that time, I mean, you know, that sets those seeds. And hopefully at some point, some of those people are going to look back and be like, wow, that was an impactful moment. And why were they doing that? And you never know where that's going to lead.
Yeah.
So that's a really neat
thing. And it's a really, and often for our interns as well, it's an out of your comfort zone experience sometimes. And I remember for myself, when I did my internship, we were invited to, as one of our ministries, we were invited to go out and hand out hot chocolates and coffees to people at 2 or 3 in the morning. And I remember getting into a conversation with someone, and he was just, it was like locking horns with someone that just wouldn't, he was really quite aggressive, and it was really difficult to know how to communicate some of the, yeah, just my heart of how much Jesus and my journey of faith meant to me, and what it means to outwork that in the world, and trying to communicate that to someone when you're kind of thrown out of your comfort zone. For me, that was a real moment of crisis. And I kind of came back from that ministry in tears and was like, I can't explain anything of what my faith means to me when someone's just kind of, you know, asking me all these questions. And it was a really kind of soul searching moment for me to kind of refine ways of how I can, in an authentic way, share what it means to live out my faith. And I think sometimes when you're put into contexts that are out of your comfort zone and you're invited to, yeah, just kind of be real and be yourself in those moments, it could be quite challenging to know how to stay yourself and share what's on your heart. So for me, that was a bit of a formational moment years ago. And it's been interesting to see how that's kind of, through the years, just been, you know, equally helpful time for other people.
Oh, absolutely. They're fairly aggressive. They're not acting or thinking normally anyways. But then on top of that, they generally don't want to hear what you have to say at that moment. They feel like they might be judged, or they might, even though that's not the message you want to convey, you just want to convey what Christ is to your heart. That's a totally pivotal moment where people are going to, you know, they're going to have to struggle through that. And it's one of the more valuable things you're going to learn, because I mean, how many times through business have I experienced it where someone will start asking me questions, and in the end, they're really just messing with me or trying to ask questions. Yet, how do you still openly, honestly share, yes, even when there's walls there that you can never really get past at that moment? So that's neat. I really like that.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought was interesting is that all the churches kind of meet together. That's hard to do even in a small town, so much less a city of 200,000 people. But maybe you can provide some context for me on the culture. I think a lot of Americans hear stats from the UK about like Christianity and especially the differences. And it's very different in a lot of ways culturally than some of the previous people that we've talked to. Like we finished in Mexico, which is primarily Catholic. You know, it's Christian, but yet it's very different what they would call it there. So can you maybe walk me through what culturally Christianity and evangelic Christianity looks like in England right now?
Yeah, sure thing. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a rich history of how Christianity is shaped culture here in the UK, and it's been formative in so many of the things that we cherish within our culture, our legal system and our healthcare, and there's been key Christians in history that have been formative in shaping that. And I think what's happened in recent years is, I guess, there's probably a detachment of recognizing some of those roots, and I think people are, I think, hungry to find a sense of meaning and a sense of spiritual fulfillment. And I think detaching the religious aspect of that is, I think, something that people are very interested in the spiritual, but not the religious. And I think there's a hunger for kind of a sense of meaning and belonging and understanding. But I think often people in positions of authority, whether that's in church or in government, have used that, used their words in their lives, haven't lived up to their words, essentially. And there's been a lot of hypocrisy. And I think people with that hypocrisy have a natural cynicism, which is understandable. So I think there's a cynicism towards traditional Christianity, I would say. But I think people are spiritually hungry and are searching. So I think where people are able to find fresh ways of communicating the heart of the gospel, which isn't necessarily communicated in ways that flag up people's understandable insecurities with hypocrisy, or maybe where people see people's lives lived out in a way that is real, and their faith is kind of they can see where the rubber hits the road and actually how what they're talking about really is impacting how they're living, and they can see what God is doing in people's lives. I think that's where there's a hunger and where there's fresh expressions of missions and church that people are exploring that are actually beginning to grow. And even in, we've worked with a student missions movement here in the UK, and we've found recently that they've started working with students, and they go out in the, when they first arrive at university, they have these, I don't know how it's the same in the States or not, but like they have all these tables set where people can join just different societies and different groups and that kind of thing. And they have a big one at the moment, which is called Try Church, and it's just inviting people to try it. And I think students of that generation, there's, I don't know, there's a curiosity, I think, maybe, that maybe there is something in this, this kind of need for spiritual fulfillment and this hunger and desire to connect spiritually with something. And I'm in a new city, in a new place, or why not try church? And there's been some really interesting fruit that's come from those stalls that people have run. And yeah, so I don't know if that's maybe a bit of a long-winded answer to your question, but I think there's a hunger and a kind of, yeah, it's different though. I think in the States there's a different cultural awareness of Christianity. And like, you know, I remember going to Walmart and seeing, you know, Christian books or Bibles, and you would never find that in supermarkets here. Yeah, it'd be much more kind of mindfulness stuff or kind of a lot of yoga and that kind of thing.
Well, now I think that's what's really interesting about that is I think we're just a little bit behind you. I do think we are mirroring that in the United States. So that's what makes that kind of cool is right now, especially over the past even decade, I would say we've seen this huge transition to this Eastern spirituality in the United States. Like you said, like yoga or Buddhism has become very popular in the United States. And yet at the same time, there's this idea in the United States of they want something spiritual. But there has been this kind of hypocrisy with leadership at times with churches. And it's one of those things that we're seeing more and more in the United States is really the point. And so I think we're headed in that direction as well. But what we are seeing, especially in the young generation, is a desire for spirituality. Like that is critical in their lives. I think we're seeing less and less people who want to just be atheist and believe in nothing. They recognize that the spiritual component of their life is important and they're searching. And so I think we're coming to a similar crossroads. I mean, I kind of felt that way just from my knowledge of the UK culture and my conversations with some friends that I have here. I mean, I even look at like Mumford and Sons, and their lyrics is very spiritual and emotional, obviously not necessarily rooted in Christianity, but there's a reason they're popular, and it's because people can drive to that and they can find, they're looking for something meaningful.
So
I think you're dead on. And I think that that's coming more and more in the United States. There's areas in the United States that are more entrenched in Christianity culture, like the South, for example. But places like Colorado, I mean, we're seeing a lot more of this, where people just, they want to be spiritual, but they really don't want anything to do with church, and they don't see it being played out in people's lives, like you were saying. So that's really cool. I appreciate you sharing that. It gives us an idea of what you're going through.
Yeah. I could share a little bit about a project I'm working on at the moment that is in some way maybe trying to meet that need a little.
Please do.
If that'd be helpful. So working with a church leader down in the south of England, and we're very good friends, and he's a fantastic storyteller, and he's taught on a lot of our schools. He's taught a lot around on the topic of the character and nature of God, and he's got a fantastic gift of taking stories from scripture or characters from scripture, people that you might feel like you're familiar with, and then retelling their story through the lens of historical context and imaginative storytelling that brings to life their stories in a much richer, more profound way. And over the course of the last 10, 11 years, he's taught in all our schools, and every time he teaches and uses a lot of storytelling, it just kind of really opens up people's understanding of the ways of God and the heart of God in a fresh way. And it's just always beautiful to see that. And he approached me, I think about a year ago, with the idea of collaborating on doing a book together, which would be essentially 23 or 24 short stories of trying to reframe stories from scripture, people that maybe don't get a huge amount of their time, people like maybe Hagar or Judas, or he's got a whole David. I mean, David gets a lot of their time, but that's one of the people in the series. And he's written a short story for each of these characters, these people, and it helps us understand the humanity of them. And the idea is that over the course of each of those different, the whole series will in some way tell the story of God at work with humanity, and I guess the gospel story through those lives that are presented in the book. And I'm illustrating that with lifelike portraits of each of those different people. So each story that he's written, I'm trying to enter into understanding what it was like for those characters and those people, and trying to draw out and connect with the humanity of that person, and then bring that to life with a portrait, which I'm creating digitally. And then the hope would be to create this book that would be stories and illustrations, but then maybe on the back of that also create an exhibition that would be maybe 24 portraits and aspects of those stories that people could dive into, and then that could then potentially be a resource for churches to use to have exhibitions, and then people could come through and see the pieces, and it might provoke something of a curiosity in the story of God at work in humanity, potentially, you know, I don't know, yeah, it might just open up that conversation for churches with people. So it's a fairly long project we're working on, and each portrait I'm working on is taking quite a bit of time. So the hope is by the end of this year to have all of those portraits done. So it's something I'd love to be able to bring next year if we're back in the States in the summer, hopefully. We'd love to be able to bring that and share some of that with you guys.
Absolutely. That sounds amazing. It's interesting. When you read through the Bible and you study the Bible, it's written deliberately with a certain style, but in ways in our modern culture, it does almost feel dehumanizing to some extent, where you read some of the characters of the Old Testament and you don't truly understand what they were going through. And it's hard to relate to our current circumstances. So that would be fantastic. That'd be really neat. When are you hoping to publish that, or is that just going to be a project that the two of you are going to try to develop?
I think it's something we'd love to. Yeah, at this stage, we're just kind of developing it. And I mean, we'll probably approach publishers, but I know it's always difficult to get a publishing contract. So, I don't know kind of where that will land. But and we'd just like to kind of, you know, take it one step at a time and see where it lands once we've kind of got all the images and stories together, and then kind of see where we go with it. But I think we would love it to be something that is a resource for people to use to open up conversations about, you know, spirituality and about, just, I think there's something also about, something that I've always kind of loved about art is it can sometimes speak to the heart, not just the head, and it can kind of stir something up within someone that maybe is not necessarily something they can cognitively explain, but they can move them in a soul place, in a deeper place within them, that then can open up conversation that can be quite, you know, a rich conversation. We're just exploring that as an option of maybe using these exhibitions as a means of opening up conversations with people.
Well, that's the beautiful part of the cultures that we're living in nowadays, is we have so many resources available to us. There's no reason not to use everything, to use art, to use the written word, to stir up those conversations. I think that's beautiful, man. And, you know, never forget that you can always publish it as an ebook and go that route as well.
Yeah, right? No, that's it. there's loads of self-publishing stuff out there, and we've looked into some of that stuff as well. So yeah, it's kind of, yeah, a lot of ways of, and if it's something like, you know, in, I guess with an ebook, you can easily kind of do that. You know, you don't have to travel and set up an exhibition, you know, in a church. You could just, you know, do it quite easily over the internet.
Yeah, that's really neat.
We dream a little bit.
I think it's great. I'm excited to see this now. So hopefully next year when you're back, or you can bring them. But at the same time, you know, keep me updated on what's going on, because that sounds like a pretty sweet deal. I love the idea of getting people to just talk about it more and be more open about the conversation. So that's really wonderful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something I didn't know about you right there. I didn't realize you were an artist. Is this something that you've just kind of done, you know, on the side for a long time, just enjoyed art? Or is that something that you try to utilize in your ministry in other ways as well?
Yeah, it's actually a kind of main heart and thrust behind ministry for me is kind of creativity and art. And before I joined YWAM, I did a degree in fine art. And that was something that really, I guess, it's always been a lifelong passion, is kind of creativity. And I guess when I finished doing my degree in fine art, I felt a little bit burnt out and was a bit frustrated about how often the art that we were creating, we were essentially training to create contemporary art that was for contemporary art galleries. And a lot of the art that we were making felt quite inaccessible to people that were friends, that were teachers or doctors, or, you know, in other areas of life that weren't initiated in this kind of art scene. And that really grated against me. And I kind of left university just with this hunger and desire to find a way to connect with people through creativity, but not quite knowing what that might look like. And then ended up in YWAM shortly after graduating from university. And then on that DTS had my base leader, so the leader of our YWAM location here in York, was an artist, and he was really hugely encouraging and spoke a lot of life to me as a young artist in missions, and gave me a lot of opportunities to create as well. So I've always found that over the years there's been space and actually a real opportunity for artists to create and use their creativity and use their art as a means of connecting with people and sharing their heart. And in many ways, art is a means of communication. And if people are able to communicate authentically with what is meaningful to them and how they see the world through their art form, and they can find a voice creatively, then it gives you the opportunity to talk about things that really matter to you. And I've found that over the years, there's been a real space for that in YWAM to create artwork that's been, for myself, I'm quite led by compassion and empathy, and often areas of justice and storytelling. All those things are things I really love to explore. And I've created a lot of artwork and developed projects that have been around either telling people stories or engaging with issues of injustice, but using creative ways and artwork as a central aspect to how we've done that in mission. So yeah, it's actually been a big part of what we've been doing over the last few years, which is something I'd love to continue to do too.
Right, absolutely. I'm with you completely. I feel like art does kind of it helps you understand yourself better. It does put people sometimes in uncomfortable situations, which is what usually tends to make them grow. so that's a good thing. That's one of the big parts that when we started the podcast. I mean, I do a lot more writing. I'm not an artist when it comes to being able to draw anything. It's horrible. So I completely envy you. the conversation, the words, and the just being able to stir up emotions in people and helping them understand what they're going through through some different medium is kind of the goal. And that's one of the things that we're doing here, is helping people. Well, that's exactly what we're doing here, right? Is how do people from our culture understand what you and Nicole are going through in a different culture, and how can we make that relatable to them? And that's what art's all about. I love it, man. That's really
Found that in the context of missions as well. There's so many different cultural barriers that you sometimes have to get over if you're working cross-culturally, and we found that in using creativity and art overseas or with people that are quite different to us, even here in the UK, working in communities that are, people's lives might be very different to our own lives. But we've always found that approaching ministry through doing creative projects has really given the opportunity to jump over some of those cultural barriers, whether it's a language barrier or whether it's just gathering together. One project that we've done in a few different cities, we've done it in France other parts. One, we did it in Lyon, and it was essentially a 8 by 8 meters by 4 meters collaborative painting, which was essentially on cardboard, and it was divided into squares. And we invited people, we did it on the main high street in Lyon in France, and invited people to come along and fill in a square and just to create with us. And we'd pre-drawn out a line drawing. It was all portraits, so people were just given a piece of chalk and charcoal, and they could come over, they could essentially color in the square that they wanted to color in a big picture, and then they could, as they were doing that, just chat with us as we were creating. We found that as people, I don't know if you find this, when you're doing something creative and you're with others and you're all doing something creative together, even if you're just doing working on something with your hands, like if you're doing like a building project and you're with others, or a painting project, sometimes the conversation can flow so much more freely as you're creating or doing something with others. And we found, as we were just doing this mural together with people that we'd never met before, just off the street, some of whom had spoke a different language to us, but we were all gathered around this one art piece together, and we had the opportunity to connect in quite meaningful ways with quite a number of people just by having the artwork as a bridge to then open up conversations with all sorts of different people that we'd never have the opportunity to interact with if it wasn't for that artwork acting as a bridge. And when you kind of often, there's been models of people doing evangelism in the context of streets for years and years, and often the model that people have used has been entering into other people's worlds with your worldview and kind of declaring it through street preaching or whatever. And often that can be, in our culture these days, quite a hostile thing, and people react negatively towards it. But when you create something in the context of somewhere public, and it's a space that you've initiated yourselves through creating a creative piece of artwork, and people are invited into that. The nature of the relationship is very different when people choose to come into your space that you've invited them into. It's a lot more openness and willingness to receive, and there's a natural curiosity when something creative is happening in front of you. People are wanting to understand why and what's the reason for it and how can I be a part of it. And so we found that there's a warmth towards people, an openness to being able to communicate with people very different to ourselves just by having that bridge built through an act of creativity.
Yeah, I'm picturing, I mean, as you're telling that story, I'm picturing literal walls just kind of coming down. I'm picturing even people's body language as they're walking on the streets normally, especially in a busy street like Lyon. And then having all of a sudden, you know, invited into this more open, free space. I mean, yeah, they're going to, I'm even seeing their body language kind of relax and everything relax. And through that conversation is going to flow and they're going to be more open because you're right. There's a natural curiosity. Like, why are these people doing this? So, that's really neat. I like that a lot. I think that's something that we can apply. Even if you're not an artist, you can apply that in your day-to-day life. I mean, we talk about this all the time, how, you and Nicole, you're our ministry partners. Missionary is a term that we should all be missionaries to some extent. And you can do this in your own life. Even if you're not an artist, you can invite people into places that are comfortable and do something together and not feel like you're just they're being preached at, but you can open your life up and interact with people. And through that, you're going to have freer conversation. So I think that's something we can take even in our day-to-day life when we're not out doing ministry every day. So
yeah, it's a really helpful connection actually. Cause I think sometimes it can be quite, I think sometimes the term missionary can be quite unhelpful in a way. Cause it can feel like it distances you from the reality of, you know, essentially we're just the same as anyone else living our lives out, seeking to follow Jesus day to day. And, you know, and like you say, being able to kind of like take that, you know, that same context of hospitality and kind of openness and how to live a life that is open and invites people in. And it's something I've seen people just do beautifully in, you know, when even, you know, when your extended hospitality is that warmth is just opens the door to receive, doesn't it? And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's neat. I love it. That's something I think a lot of people are going to take and hopefully be inspired by, because it's something that we can all do in our life. And so, I don't know. I'm excited by that. I'm hopeful that people enjoy that part of our conversation and gain something from it. All of it, really. But that's inspired me. Now, this is the thing I learned about these podcasts that I love the most is like, I learn something every single time and I always
come out of
conversations feeling encouraged or stronger in my faith or in some way applying something new. So it's always been a fun experience. One thing that
likewise.
Oh, thank you. Well, one of the things that I'm realizing really quickly that we've been a bit remiss about because it's flown by. We're already at like 48 minutes and I try to do an hour. It almost never ends up at an hour, but because I get too curious and we do this and I get too excited to just talk. But one thing, I mean, we've come a long way in the conversation and we do need to talk. I mean, we talked about how you're married to Nicole, but you also have a couple kids and they're young. Yeah. And as somebody who has a 3-year-old son, you've got a 3-year-old and almost a 1-year-old. Can you talk about your kids a little bit and also talk about how that has changed any dynamic for you in your ministry? Because it has to, right? I mean, I've got a 3-year-old and my whole life got flipped upside down. So I'd love to hear your take on that and how that's impacted your ministry.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, so we've got a 3-year-old Savannah. She is just about 3.5 now. And we've got Kiara, whose birthday is on the 27th of April. So I don't know when this podcast will go out, but yeah, that's very soon for us. It's on Monday. So yeah, we're really excited to have the two of them. Two little girls, they're great. it does change everything having kids. Like it's exhausting in a lot of ways, but it's just, yeah, it's so, it's amazing what they teach you, and how much you can kind of grow through becoming a dad and becoming a mum and having a family. And yeah, family's been a big, big change for us since we were last back in the States. We were last back in 2015. And a big part of the reason we haven't been able to get back has been because we've either, Nicole's been in the middle of pregnancy, or we've had young babies and it's been difficult to get over. And so it has been hard to have young family, but not be able to, for Nicole to be able to get back and enjoy sharing our young family with, you know, people that care for us and love us back in Salida. And unless, you know, family we haven't been able to see yet since the kids have arrived. And we were planning to come back this summer, and it's heartbreaking to miss that, to be honest, and particularly for Nicole. But yeah, we found that, like, there's so many ways life changes when you have a young family. We found that, like, I think it's helped enrich my understanding of what it means to carry the idea of God as Father, and to view the world around me more from the eyes of the Father. I think I'm more tender. I think I'm softer in some respects, in when things that used to, you know, I wouldn't bat an eyelid at, when I'm watching the news, I would kind of maybe see something, a crisis of some kind. And now there's something in my heart that aches, as a dad, and seeing things in the world around me that, I guess my view on the world from that perspective, I feel like I ache more, for those that are hurting. And I think that probably is sharing in God's heart as a father as well, in a way that, you know, what aches his heart as a dad, you know, I'm sharing in some of that now as a father in a way that I didn't when I was pre-dad days. So that's one aspect of, yeah, I think how it's kind of changing my view on the world. And then in kind of practical terms, we've been able to, when we've run our internships, carry that role of being a pastoral support and a presence in the lives of those young people that have come and been with us, in a different way as a family, I think, than when we were just us as we were single and we were doing a similar things, or when we were a young married couple. I think when we've had kids around, it's brought a dynamic to our team life that, is I keep using this word, but is richer. I do think kids are enriching, and I think they themselves bring something to us as a team, and there's a joy that they bring, a curiosity that they bring, a sense of abandonment that they bring. They love to play with the new people that come and join us. They love making friends with new people that spend time with us on these internships. And it's just, I think for them as well, provided away from home for people that have left home and left the context of family and come to the other side of the world and joined us here in York, I think having a family dynamic of kids around and that I think provides something for those that are with us on an internship that it's probably really healthy, I think.
Oh, that's awesome. I totally understand so many of your sentiments. I mean, you do feel enriched in a lot of ways. Now, don't get me wrong. There's many days with a 3-year-old boy, especially, where I'm like, I don't feel enriched at all. I think I'm growing even in that. You know, I think I'm learning. Like, it definitely stretches me because my general personality is very laid back and my wife's personality is that way. Both of us are very, you know, take the world kind of as it comes. It's okay. We're just going to kind of be fine. But then, we definitely get stretched to points where both of us have looked in the mirror at times and been like, who am I? Like, what am I, what did I just do or say or think, or, you know? And so, it really has developed
it's interesting to look at it in the context of it is enriching. Even when it's difficult, I'm growing. And I think there was times before having kids where I was much more stagnant. Because as your kid changes, especially at these young ages, I mean, I know you've seen this, like from 1 to 3, they change like 1,000 times. And the second you, you think, oh, we kind of got this figured out, we're kind of on a good wavelength, and bam, something switches on you and you have to adapt. And so it's definitely an interesting context. And yet I think that, it's really cool. A couple of things that I love. I love that you're able to apply them into your work and make it a richer experience for the people that you're working with. Cause I think that's true, especially those young people. One, it's just an encouragement that, you know, there's people that live lives as husband and wife, parents, and still, you know, give to the gospel. And that's an encouragement to some of those people who are coming from all kinds of backgrounds. So that's one. And then I loved when you said you're kind of sharing your father in the father's ache, because I didn't realize that either until I'd had a kid. And I mean, I'll watch the news, but I'll also watch something. I'll like sit down to watch a sitcom and just relax or something. And all of a sudden I catch myself like weeping over like something that makes no sense. And it is, I think it's like a heart thing that's gone on as I've had a kid and started to look at him as a father, same way. I think I'm relating to the father that way. So that was a great, great way of putting it. One other thing we need to talk about, we have to talk about just because it's the world right now, is we got to talk about this COVID virus and how this is impacting you guys. I mean, you said you can't come home over the summer, but I mean, it's changed a lot of things and it's kind of flipped things on its head. How has this impacted you guys? I mean, I know England has been shut down at times. How does that impact your ministry?
So we're on lockdown at the moment here in the UK. So that means that we're encouraged to stay at home where possible and only really allowed to go out on one piece of exercise a day. So social distancing is the norm. And I think, to be honest, most people are trying to work from home and everywhere is more or less deserted. There are people who are kind of key workers that are working in medical professions and keeping things, you know, like shops and supermarkets ticking over and all that kind of thing, and sacrificing in a very real way. For us, in terms of ministry side of things, the timing of it is heartbreaking to not be able to get back to the States. It's really hard to kind of be missing out on seeing family and connecting with friends and you guys at Grace Church. To be honest, you know, the last time we were able to spend time with you were in the old church building. We haven't seen the new church yet, so we're just really excited to come over when we can. I think in our city we've been relatively, the virus hasn't been particularly prevalent, which has been great. But there are, you know, I think in the country itself, we've had close to 20,000 deaths. And I think it's about 150,000 cases. In terms of ministry side of things as well, I've been able to continue working with this portrait series, so I can do that from home, which has been great. So being able to work on that, and then I wear another couple of hats kind of within YWAM. Like many of us with work, we've got different hats that we wear, and one of the hats I wear is kind of convening leaders within YWAM in our nation, kind of for a kind of gathering every couple of times in a year. And we've kind of probably got about 100 kind of leaders from different locations, ministry leaders and stuff, and myself and someone else convene those kind of gatherings. And we've developed a new rhythm of gathering online, which has actually been really great to be able to kind of become more familiar with each other and what each other is up to, and different enriching our relationships with each other across the country. And then within the region as well, we've got a region of Wales, Ireland, England, and Scotland within YWAM. And yeah, we've been able to kind of, we're looking to try and gather leaders together to pray for our nations, to support one another in this time, to see what God might be saying to us and discern what he's saying. And yeah, we've been able to do a lot of stuff on Zoom relating to that. So yeah, like a lot of people, getting a little bit of Zoom fatigue, but yeah, there's still a lot that you can do online.
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny when this whole thing happened, I just started a new job where I was working from home, and I'm on Zoom all the time. And so literally like 4 weeks into my job, I was like the expert of all of my friends and family on Zoom and had to teach everybody what was going on.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. It was definitely God's timing, I guess. So,
It is
interesting.
I've never even heard of Zoom until like...
Until the outbreak. No, that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's amazing that their stock is doing incredibly well right now. So I should have got in on the ground floor on that one, I guess. But the it really is interesting. Some of the things I've noticed about the dynamic with Zoom is like my family will get together, and we'll get together on a Friday night or something and Zoom every now and then during the outbreak, and you know, it's like, well, we never get to see each other, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, we never saw each other beforehand. And so why weren't we
doing this beforehand?
Like there's some things that it's made those relationships better and stronger just because it's forced us all to slow down a little bit. I mean, even in the past, like it's all of us have young kids. It's not like we were going to be out doing anything on a Friday night. So we're all at home anyways, but all of a sudden we started to think about, hey, we should connect with people more instead of just being at home. So, and for me personally, it's watching a lot less sports and taking time to enjoy family, I guess. So
yeah, I think that's true. I think that there has been a bit of an opportunity to reevaluate, hasn't there, with this kind of change of pace and people kind of, you know, having to, you know, be restricted in ways that we weren't expecting. And I think that's something that we're beginning to realize is why I'm more regionally and as kind of leaders kind of outside of just York, but kind of in our region, that maybe God is speaking to us about finding a new rhythm and a new way of doing things that might draw us closer together. And I remember we had to read a book as part of this course that we did last year. And I think it was a book by John Ortberg. I'm trying to remember the title, The Life That You Always Wanted, I think it is. He has a great chapter on there about the spiritual practice of slowing and how as we slow down, there's so much more that we can receive when we do that. And I think he says something along the lines of that hurry is the greatest spiritual enemy, or the greatest enemy to the spiritual life in our day and in our age. And just realizing how much hurry can steal us from the opportunity to come in touch with those around us and to be able to love well, and that sometimes it's very difficult to love, you know, in a really true way when you're just so busy hurrying from one thing to the next. It's very hard to kind of see the needs around you and be attentive to what might be going on in people's lives and in even in your own family's lives, or you know. So I think for us, yeah, we're realizing actually that this time gives us the space to connect deeper, you know, with relationships that God has put in our lives. And we're finding as a family we're getting closer to one another and enjoying the kids more and getting to spend time with them a lot. And so there are things that I think that hopefully will bring a change in the way we do things the other side of this virus that will actually become in hindsight a gift.
Yeah, what I'm hoping is that we do continue these practices, because I think it's going to be easy when life returns to what it was to immediately move back to what we were doing. And I'm with you, there's been a lot of growth and a lot of, I don't know, just figuring out what's important and really focusing on relationship and focusing on other human beings and what's going on in their lives. Even my neighbors, it's not hard to stop and have a 20-minute conversation over the fence, whereas that never happened before. So I'm hoping that we take the good things. I know God knew it was coming, knows all of its purposes, but I'm really hoping that we take those moments to analyze it. And hopefully there's great spiritual growth in this time. I think a lot of people are hurting too. It's it's hard for me coming from Salida. I think a lot of us in Salida don't really recognize that there are places in the world right now that are, there is major hurt. And you know, things have really changed and it's stressful and it's hard. I mean, for in Salida, we just go for a walk or whatever we would normally do. So it's, we don't see some of that, but you know, some of the people I work with in New York, which is different than your York, is, you know, it's very, there's a lot of hurt and a lot of pain, and there's a lot of opportunity for outreach in places like those. So I'm hoping it's an opportunity for us to move forward. But man, we're, so I've still got a few, like just a couple quick things, and then I can let you go because I know Nicole's like, he's got to get off this phone call so that he can come up with that. And maybe that's maybe
I'm on cooking like, duties, so I, yeah.
No, but so I guess we're gonna the last three things we're gonna do. I'm gonna have you share kind of a fun story, and I'll get to that in 1 second. And then we're gonna do some contact information, and then we're just gonna talk about some financial components. So I think first of all, you know, usually I just try to get. I used to start by asking like a question, like what's the weirdest thing you've eaten or whatever in this culture. But, and that worked really well for people in like Thailand and things like that. But you know, there's a lot of different things, but in your circumstances, I mean, it's just, it's different. It's not that the UK is not that different from where we're at. So, but you get to work with a ton of kids. I'm wondering if you have like one story, and it doesn't have to be long, or it doesn't even have to be, I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but just like one thing that has happened in YWAM that was just silly or funny, but at the same time caused a lot of growth, that was just, you know, an interesting time that you won't forget.
Yeah. Okay. Let me have a little think. Try and, You end up having a whole number of stories when you're involved in an organization like YWAM. You kind of often get thrown into context and circumstances that develop into great stories. I'm trying to think of which one. So say the question again. It was a story relating to what?
Yeah, just a story related to maybe your work or with YWAM, or maybe even one of the, you know, maybe some awkward or funny situation that you've been put into, you know, with one of your DTSs or something. Maybe think of it like a story, like one of the kids in the last DTS went home and was like, this is a story I'm going to remember forever. And just one of those silly situations.
Okay. So I can tell you one story, it's a little bit, okay, now I can tell you a local one that that might relate, and you can edit it out, and we can change it if it doesn't work. So a story that's come to mind is we were an orientation when we first have our interns arrive from all over the world, and they arrive with us in York. We have to take them around, show them around, get them to know the city a little bit, and I just remember. Taking, I think there was probably about maybe 10 of them, and then I was kind of leading them through the city, and we got to a set of traffic lights, and sometimes there's no such thing here as jaywalking, where you can kind of get fined for crossing the road in front of traffic or anything like that. You can kind of more or less, if you think you can make it, you can go, sometimes when you kind of got a group of people with you, it's easy to forget that they're, well, at least for me, it was hard for me to remember that they weren't orientated to the city. So I saw a gap in the road, crossing the road. And I remember thinking, oh, I reckon we can get across there before the next car comes. So anyway, we ran over across the road. And then we've basically got these new folk that have arrived with us here in the UK, in New York. And they start crossing the road, and then some of them are paralyzed halfway because they see traffic coming. Some of them don't know whether to go back, don't know whether to go forward. So they just freeze, and then the traffic will start slowing down. And then you have half of them kind of running over the road, and then the other half kind of not quite sure whether to run back. And then there's some others that are still on the other side of the road that haven't made the journey over yet. And they see that the rest of the group the rest of the herd are on the other side of the road. So they start running, and it just becomes this whole drawn out experience of crossing the road, which was so hard for him. And I felt awful after, because it's entirely my fault. I should have just gone where there was a big gap and a big space, but I'm so used to just kind of like diving through the little gaps and thinking I could make it. So yeah, I don't come out necessarily in the best light in that story, which is great. But it was something which was, it was there. It was, they gave me grief for that for a long time. So yeah, that is one story. Just a simple thing, crossing the road, who'd know that it would be something I would be hearing, getting grief from for months afterwards. So that was one. Yeah, that's one thought.
That's exactly what we're looking for.
And I can tell you another story from overseas, or if that, I don't know if that works.
Yeah, do hit me with another one.
So I remember we were visiting a village, and we had been presented that we were in something that you have the opportunity to kind of experience when, you know, you kind of go overseas and they're working with a missions agency like YWAM, and it's just the incredible hospitality of people who invite you into their homes. And we were just experiencing the most profound hospitality from some people that had barely anything over in China. And they really were quite a poor village, but they'd gone out and invested so much of what they had in putting on this incredible meal. And the culture over there is, I think, if I'm remembering rightly, that you would try and leave a little bit on the plate to show that they had provided so much food that you, that they'd provided enough food to satisfy you without it all kind of going, if you see what I mean. One of the foods that they gave us was this this bean dish that was a fermented bean dish, and it tasted something like it was just the most vile thing in the world. It smelled terrible. All of us were gagging. But you had the meal in front of us, and we were forgetting this cultural thing. So we were eating it and finishing the plates, but forgetting that we needed to leave a little bit more on the plate and just kind of swigging it down with water. And then essentially, like, some people were like close to throwing up, and it was just so embarrassing because we just couldn't cope with the situation very well. We then ended up, it got worked out in the end, and we left that meal. And as we were leaving, there was one lady that was just desperate to thrust sunflower seeds on us, and we were trying to say no, but it was her means of kind of saying thank you or expressing generosity or welcome in some way. And she basically would just go to different members of our team, and when we weren't looking, she would stuff handfuls of sunflower seeds in our pockets or in our backpacks. Or so for kind of days afterwards, we were kind of you know, unpacking things from our bags and having all these sunflower seeds just pouring out, because, like, you know, we all kind of found that we'd taken on way more than we realized. So that was just a funny little memory from when we were overseas. So yeah.
It's funny how just a small cultural context like that just becomes
you can end up in deep water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. That's fantastic. Although that was probably a cool reminder, because probably for days on end you were like, you know, you're receiving her gratitude by pulling up.
I know. Yeah. We just think of that lady. What a legend.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome, man. Okay. Those are perfect. That's exactly what I was looking for. Just some basic anecdotes of some things that happen in mission life that, you know, that's never happened to me.
Yeah.
I've never had somebody. I mean, I've probably had troubles crossing the road, to be honest. But I think it's awesome when you're dealing with a bunch of kids that are already being stressed and pushed to their limits, and then you just abandon half of them on the other side of the road and some of them in the middle.
I know.
So that's a pretty good, that's good leadership technique.
It's right a story there. You don't tell the parents after the first week.
Oh, I love it. Well, cool, man. All right. I think we're just going to do two more things. And then I'm going to pray for you guys, and then we'll kind of sign off. So first of all, what's the best way to contact you guys? Because sometimes I have people that want to, I'm trying to encourage people to get in touch with you and pray with you and be more active in their relationships with you. So,
Yeah, no, that, thank you. That'd be, that's great. Probably the best way is you can find us on Facebook. We, if you've become friends with me, Dave Nevard, on Facebook, you can, I can then add you to our, we've got a Facebook kind of family group where we sometimes kind of post up news of what's going on, or prayer needs. And then my email is another good one, on Nicole's email. So my email is davenevard@gmail.com. And then Nicole's is NicoleAmyPurcell@gmail.com. Either of those will get to us. And yeah, we'd love to chat, and feel free to email us anytime.
Awesome. I'm really encouraging that. I think we're starting to see more and more of that as the podcast has grown. This has been an interesting time, because I really expected the podcast to continue doing, but it was getting more and more views. And then I really thought, well, everyone's at home now. Now it's really going to take off. And it hasn't. And I don't know exactly what that is. It's actually dipped a little bit. And so I still think we're getting a lot of people that are listening. A lot of people are interested. I get a lot of comments every month. So I know there's people that are actively engaging, and I'm trying to continue getting them pushed to engage with you. But I'm excited for them to get to chat with you. So
yeah, it's cool.
The other thing that I want to ask about, I mean, missionaries suck at this, so I always have to ask it, and I have to ask you to be as honest as possible. But most missionaries or our mission partners are terribly undersupported, or and they just don't like asking for money. And yet it's how you guys make a living, right? So tell me a little bit about where your financial needs are at and how we can best support you that way.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think for us, what we we'd love, yeah, just if there's anyone that's interested in our heart and who we are, we'd love to kind of develop more of a relationship with you. Because I think, like, so much of kind of what we're doing, I think, would be, for us, it'd be so life-giving to know that people are interested in what we're up to and are wanting to engage with us in a really personal way. So if you want to connect with us, we would, and if you're genuinely interested in us, we'd love to hear from you. In terms of the financial side of things, we have a growing young family, so obviously there's a lot of expenses that we are encountering kind of and realizing from different phases. Savannah will be starting school next year, and yeah, there's a number of different kind of groups we'd love to get her involved in, and all those different kind of activities and groups, they all start to add up. And I think we are relatively in need of kind of in growing our finances. So yeah, that would be very gratefully received. But we'd very much love it if it was kind of you're interested in us and would love to kind of connect with us rather than just kind of purely a kind of a financial gift.
Right. Yeah. Well, the relationship is really the key component. Although I'll be honest too, there are lots of people who are looking to support people and looking for ways to support the resources that God has given them. And so those are, you know, these are places you can go. And oftentimes, you know, missionary support is hard. And the other thing that you need to take into context is not really being able to travel and make some of those connections has been really difficult, I imagine, you know, as you've had a young family. Like, that changes your ability to travel around. When you can't travel around, it's hard to connect with the churches that are supporting you and actually generate more support and make relationships. So connect, you know, either way, connect with Dave and Nicole. But also, you know, if you are feeling in any way like this is something you'd like to support, reach out to them and just see where they're at and get to know them. And maybe that's something God can lay on your heart. So definitely we'll be praying for that as well. What are some of your strongest prayer needs right now?
Probably I would say discernment in this time of transition, in knowing how to adjust to the kind of changes that will be coming as our kind of closest friends here that we've worked closely with will be moving back to the States. So we will no longer kind of be collaborating together, which has been an unusual thing to have a couple that you've journeyed with for that long in YWAM, kind of in such a close context. Relationships often exist over a long time in YWAM, and deep relationships, but often they're not in the same ministry or the same place. But we've been blessed by working with Doug and Beth for close to 12 years now, and it's going to be a grieving process to kind of see that relationship change as they move back to the States. So I think praying for that process of grieving and of letting go and finding a new way of kind of deepening community going forward, we would have good discernment in the practical aspects of what team life looks like here in York going forward. And I think for Nicole, she would really appreciate prayer for the, it is grieving, letting go of this opportunity to come back this summer. It's really hard for her to kind of not experience being with family and friends again. Praying for her that she would have grace for this time, I think would be really, really hugely appreciated. And then for the kids, that they would be able to, I think for Savannah, that she would be able to still go through this season of this virus in a way that she's been doing so well through this, and that she would just continue to be able to find relationships that are life-giving to her. She's very sociable and loves people, and it's really hard for her to not see friends and that kind of thing. So for her, that she would be able to remain healthy in that way if this is drawn out over even longer, as the summer months approach, and she just wants to be out playing with friends. It's just that she would have the grace for that as well, and for Kiara, that she would enjoy her birthday, and that she'd continue to be healthy and grow well, and that we would begin to see more of her personality and who she is, and be able to kind of draw that out of her.
Absolutely. I found that with our 3-year-old, like, parenting was keeping alive for a long time. And then when I started getting to know my kid and actually getting to parent in a way, that was really the fun times, and learning who my kid is, and that's the phase you're getting ready to go through with Kiara. So how do you spell that?
Yeah, it's a bit unusual. It's K-I-A-R-A.
Okay, perfect.
So the name comes from Italy. We were on an outreach in Rome, and we came across that name and loved it over there. It's spelled C-H-I-A-R-A, okay. C-H-I-A-R-A over there. But we liked it with a K, so we changed it. And so she's Kiara.
I love it. It's very pretty. Last question. Are you guys, and this may be too soon even, but are you planning on having more children down the road?
Two nights ago, we were looking back at old photos of the process of kind of having a kid and then kind of the days and weeks afterwards. And it was, beautiful in many ways, but it's a very challenging time. Like those first few kind of weeks and months, there's some special moments, but it's also quite challenging. And I think it's too soon for us at the moment to think about having another kid.
Yeah.
I think we had always talked about the possibility of 3. It's not necessarily off the cards, but I think we might have a little bit more of a gap at this stage. That's where we're at the moment.
I gotcha. It's understandable.
Saying that, we'll end up with triplets next summer.
There you go. Exactly. That's a
my dad's got triplet sisters. So my dad has triplet sisters, so it is in the family. So
we've talked about that in the past, me and Amy have, and I feel like if she had triplets like right now, because she's pregnant right now, fortunately it's just one.
Oh wow, really? Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. We're not that far behind you, so We're although we're in the same stage, we're like, man, that, like, we're starting to remember what it was like to have a newborn, and it's just like, oh no, what have we done? Like we're a bit. So, but that,
we found it for, at least for our second time, was a lot easier than the first time. I think because the first time we just didn't know anything of what we were doing.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds exactly like what we went through. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting time. So I understand completely, but. Well, let me.
When's your baby due?
Oh, end of August. So
okay.
Yeah, cool. She's, I don't know. They know weeks. I think she said she was 22 weeks in. Every time I ask her, like every week, I'm like, "How many weeks in are we?" And you know, in the end, I'm just like, "Actually, just tell me when the baby's coming and when to be at the hospital."
You get it's very easy to get lost in what weeks are what.
Totally. Yeah. Fortunately, we've got the nice app that tells us that our baby is the size of different vegetables. So you know,
there you go. Happy days.
Yeah, exactly. I get to compare it to an ear of corn this week. So nothing really brings out the personality of your child like comparing it to a vegetable. But
yeah, you still do it when they enter into the world as well, you know.
That's true, yeah.
Savannah is the size of maybe, I don't know what vegetables a 3-year-old would equate to, a very, very large marrow.
I love it. Yeah, that's just something we need to keep going. I feel like I'm gonna develop an app for that. Like, your baby is 2 months old. It now looks, yeah, like a giant cantaloupe. Or I love it.
I think the world needs it. We're missing that in the world at the moment.
Absolutely.
We need that app.
I've got many talents that I feel like the world is missing that for some reason have never fully developed. Well, I want to pray for you real quick if I can, and then I'm going to let you go so you can spend some time with your family. And my family actually just got back as well. So we'll head that direction. But if I can pray for you real quick, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Father God, we just thank you for another great conversation with Dave, just knowing that him and Nicole are serving you faithfully right now in York, and just doing your work in the UK. It's such an encouragement to us as a church body to know that there are active members of our body that are out serving you in so many different areas of the world. And so getting these conversations, it just really blesses us as a church body. And we hope that we can just share that blessing with Dave and Nicole. And right now we pray for them as they're transitioning. It's hard to transition in any part of life. And yet when you feel like you're losing some of your deepest relationships, Father, this is a really difficult time. And we pray for the emotion that comes with that, with the grief, just in losing a friend, even though they'll still be friends, but losing a partner in your work. And we just pray that they'll be able to transition well, and that you'll give them wisdom in what the next steps are and how to best proceed with that, Father. With this virus right now, we continue to lift up really the world and, just the hurting people that are in it and the small ways that it impacts us, like Nicole and Dave not being able to come home and see family. That's really difficult, especially on a young mother. And we just pray for Nicole and the kids and for Dave, that they would be able to, still build those connections, and that soon you would give them the opportunity to return home and visit family. And the difficulty of what their kids are going through right now, Father, as well, we just pray for both Savannah and Kiara, that as they're growing up in a time where they're more isolated, that you would develop their family relationships with Nicole and Dave, but also just that you wouldn't break their spirit of wanting to reach out to other people and be social and be with other kids. And we pray that you would continue to allow that to develop as they grow. And as we get to know more about Kiara's personality, just that you would, I would just pray for that little spirit, that you would grow both of them and soften their hearts so that they would see you. As we pray for ourselves most days, we just pray that you would give Dave and Nicole the strength to raise their kids in a way that honors you, that they seek you actively in their lives, Father, because truthfully, that's the most important part of what we're doing as parents. And it's such a burden and a not a burden, but a responsibility that can feel like a burden. And we just pray that you would make that an easy time for them as parents, Father, as they grow. And we just thank you so much for Dave and Nicole and the ministry that they're doing. And in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time, Dave. This has been a great conversation, man. I'm really, like I said, I always say about an hour, and then by the time I get done, I'm like, an hour and a half. Where did the time go?
I know. Yeah, I really appreciate it, man. It was great to chat. It felt very, very at ease being able to talk. And yeah, thanks for the space to be able to. It is hard without this summer being able to get back, and it feels like a great gift to be able to, in some way, share something of what we're up to with the church. So yeah, thank you for that.
Thanks again, Dave.
No problem at all. Thank you.
I know, right? What an amazing show that was. I know what you're thinking. It was incredible. I mean, just learning so much about some of our mission partners. I feel like I have missed this. I needed this conversation. You know, what I love about what Dave and Nicole doing, they're meeting people where they're at, and they're using the opportunities and the gifts that God has given them to foster a relationship of hospitality and open dialogue about their faith. I love the part where Dave talks about how he went through a bit of a crisis, learning how to communicate what Christ has meant to him and what that part of his learning was like. And just the ability to take that, recognize that people are all in different spots, but create comfortable situations that, well, they're uncomfortable, but they become comfortable with believers and non-believers alike, and inviting them into your space and creating something together, using your art. It's just a really unbelievable thing that they're doing. I had a lot of fun with this conversation. I hope you had a great time too. We're going to try to not take another month off. I'm going to be a little bit curious what happens with COVID. I want to continue to give you updates on our ministry partners. But I needed this. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Have a wonderful month and stay safe and healthy out there.
Wash all my sins away. dying lamb, thy precious blood shall never lose its power. Till all the ransomed church of God be sent to sin no more. Be sent to sin no more.
Power to save. I'll sing thy power to save.